Resume our meeting. I give the floor to April.
Thank you. We're looking at agenda paper 24. Agenda paper 24A summarises the feedback received in response to the request for views on the 2015 agenda consultation. The request for views was published in August and the comment period ended on 31st of December. The feedback summarised in the paper was obtained from comment letters on the request for views and an outreach undertaken by board members and staff. The other paper for this meeting is agenda paper 24B, which is on the trustees' review of structure and effectiveness. And that paper summarises feedback received by the trustees in response to their request for views. Two of the major themes raised in the trustees' request for views, the relevance of IFRS standards and the consistent application of IFRS standards, are relevant to the board's agenda consultation. And we've allowed time at the end of this session for you to query or discuss that feedback, and David and Sarah are here for that. So paper 24A doesn't discuss in detail the comments received on individual projects. The staff intends to bring a summary of those comments to a later meeting, and the paper doesn't include any staff recommendations. The board will not be asked to make any decisions at this session. We received 119 comment letters, which is approximately half of those which were received in the 2011 consultation. Preparers are proportionately fewer this time than the last. We think that's because in 2011, which was our first consultation, we received proportionally more responses from preparers because they were proposing specific topics. For example, you may remember we had over 60 preparers in support of the bearer plants amendment to IS 41. We've received a broad range of geographical responses. There are proportionately more global entities this time because we've had global respondents that include entities that are interested in topics such as climate change. And North America is proportionately fewer because of reduced responses from the USA. So we list the key messages that we've received on pages 5, 6, and 7 on the paper. And on page 7, we also note some areas where messages from investors differed from other respondents. The paper is then arranged by the questions in the request for views, the 8 questions in the request for views. Is it easiest if we take each question in turn to ask what comments or queries you have?
I think so.
In which case, if we start with question 1, which is on page 8 to 12, do you have any questions on the comments that we received on the balance between the board's types of activities? We received messages that obviously insurance contracts and leases were extremely important. The conceptual framework is fundamental to a principle-based standard-setting regime. And those, I think, were the principal messages in that area.
Disclosure initiative, eh?
Yeah, the disclosure initiative was also extremely important, yes.
April, just a quick observation. Paragraph 20 says few respondents suggested categorizing in a different way. And while I think we may want to think about that in terms of communication, my observation looking at it is it doesn't, we may or may not want to, but I think it's more a communication issue because when I look at it, this doesn't help me set priorities. So I think if we were to think about it, it's more a communication outward. And I'm not sure if everybody on the outside would share that they'd rather see things categorized this way.
I have a question or observation for David. In terms of the key messages you received, David, do you think the trustees share the view that the board should have fewer projects on its agenda, just in general, relative to where we are today?
We haven't discussed that specifically with them. I guess it's a question of how much resource each project would take up, how much in terms of time, not only for the board, but for the world at large in terms of consultation documents. And it might be one issue that we discuss with the trustees in May when they'll receive an update of where things stand with the agenda consultation, the responses to it, and maybe some indication of where the board's going for its future agenda. if it comes with a huge laundry list of projects, the trustees may well then say, well, have we got the resources, or have you got the resources to deliver on that?
It'd be interesting to kind of look at the history of the organization and see the number of active projects and staff size, board members, et cetera, over time. And then, as you say, your forecast is really more important than the history, but it'd be interesting just to see how much we've done.
I think history is important. If you recall at the time when there was a 2011 deadline to finish off quite a number of major projects, I think that put a lot of strain on the board, on the organisation as a whole, and you know, being on the outside at that time, but trying to follow the board's agenda, it's putting pressure on the constituents as well. So I think we need to be mindful of the situation that was happening at that time.
Okay. Page 10, little B. As I've suggested, that the board should consider projects in terms of themes. Yeah, but did they provide any ideas about the themes that could be adopted?
No.
Okay, just this interpretation, same as every council. General statement, but no specific ideas about which of those.
April, in terms of the comments in paragraph 28, that's in the section, right, balance of the board's activities. I think in terms of coming back to us, one of the things we'll have to look at is whether there's any more detail in the letters. Maybe you have it off the top of your head about views on standard setting activity, because this says reduce the proportion allocated to standard setting because you'll have to spend more resources in implementation support. And one question is, when they say the board will need more resources, does that mean literally the board is the organization, or do they think literally the board? Because some of, depending upon what kind of implementation activities they have in mind, it may not be board time, it might be staff time, it might be external party time, not like party rah-rah, but parties, people doing that. So if there's anything more that can be mined for getting these insights, because I'm not sure whether that's people who say, I don't want anything new in this period, and so therefore I'm going to offer the comments on things that relate to it, or whether it's driven by we want you to do other things and why they think that will be board resources.
My sense is that the main motivation for the comments is probably that we should do less standard setting. So use your energy elsewhere. Because if you look at the precise suggestions for implementation activities that we should employ, I'm not so sure that's very precise.
Yeah. That's my gut too, but I guess just maybe going back and seeing if there's anything more specific in the letters when you go looking for just this data.
Yeah. Okay. Question 2 and 3 dealt with the research program. Question 2 dealt with what components should be on the research program, and question 3 on how to prioritize the individual projects. We had, I think perhaps because the research program is relatively new, some people were confused, I think, about how the research program operates in practice. And they asked us how projects move between the different assessment phases that we had in the request reviews. There were some people who were concerned that when we did the post-implementation review, particularly via IFRS 3, we didn't progress things quickly enough out of the research stage into a development stage. So there has been, I think, a little bit of a learning curve on that. And with the benefit of hindsight, perhaps the distinction between an assessment phase and a development phase isn't as clear as it might be. There's some discussion about the number of topics which we should have on the research agenda. When we talked about prioritization of projects, we gave a number of criteria that we thought would justify putting a research topic onto the research program in paragraph 38. And we received in paragraph 43 a number of factors that respondents thought we should take into account when we are looking at prioritising topics. And I think probably the message coming across from this is that it's very difficult to see a distinct framework or theme for how
we need
prioritise.
A Monte Carlo simulation.
Do indeed. And I think probably that for some projects, some factors will be more significant than other factors, and that we'll probably have to take that into account when we're looking at assessment. But I don't know if you have any queries. These are the top-level comments. As we said earlier, we'll look at comments on individual projects in detail, project by project, at a future meeting of the IASB.
April, on paragraph 31, they mentioned thought leadership. What were they saying exactly?
Blue sky thinking, probably.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the last agenda consultation we asked that question and they all came back and said, don't do any blue sky thinking. Keep your feet on the ground, and they're strongly opposed to it. So it's interesting, we didn't ask the question this time, but somebody's come out in favour.
In terms of this search for a theme, which I've been devoting a lot of thinking to in the last year, because I think it's always good to have a sort of an inspirational theme. But if you look at the areas that people think are important, I think they're and where we are going probably to go to devote more energy to, I think there are strands of one theme which you might call strengthening the communication effectiveness of financial reporting or of IFRS. If you look at the disclosure initiative, that's part of it. Work we're going to do on primary financial statements or performance reporting. The work we discussed this morning in a closed session on digital reporting. The work we're going to do in terms of performance reporting / non-GAAP measures. All these these work strands are want to enhance the communication effectiveness of what we do, and would not require these huge system changes that the latest standard setting that we have done impose on preparers, and which they are very tired of, like revenue recognition, leases, etc. It is more a question of pulling together the information that they already have to collect and presenting it in a better way. So I think with that theme, we could a combined message of, well, we're going to improve what we have, but we will not those improvements will not bring the same huge operational challenges that our standards setting lately has brought to preparers. So that might be an appealing message.
There's also a theme which I think recurs about consistent application and strengthening the consistent application of IFRS.
That's another theme, which is already under our scope. Sue?
One of the things that strikes me looking at the feedback, particularly on questions 2 and 3, is not so much what it says about the agenda, but what it says about our communication. Because I know that we have tried to communicate what research means and how things move from phase to phase, but some of the feedback which suggests some people think that if it's on the research phase, it means that we don't think it's a very high priority, for example, and I don't think that's what we intend. So I think we need to, as part of this, think about better ways to communicate how we've allocated things and also what the different phases mean. And I don't know whether that's the way we express our work plan or whether it's other sort of snapshot type materials to help with communication, but I think we could help people's understanding and help ourselves if we step back and spent a bit more time on that sort of communication thing. Also, the other thought was that I think we need to be careful taking some comments too much at face value, because I find some of them quite contradictory. For example, a lot of people complain about how long it's taken us to finish old projects, and of course it's taken us longer than we had hoped in many cases. Partly I think that's because of the amount of consultation we've done, which I think they would like us to do. So, but the other point is that I think we, in our hearts, believe that if we spent more time with our problem definition, sometimes maybe we could have had a more inefficient process. So criticising us for spending too long on developing things and, for example, having two discussion papers on rate regulation, I think might end up being contrary to the bigger objective of more timely overall completion if we're careful with how we do the research. So I think we need to be careful not to overreact to some of these things, but again, I think it comes back to communication of what we're trying to achieve in that research phase and why we really do believe that it increases overall efficiency. And I know that that's been communicated in the past, but either people haven't heard or we haven't articulated it clearly enough, and we need to work on it.
I think quite a few people are confused because we have a separate research program, so that they think it's separate in some way from the rest of standard setting, whereas other people refer to research as a phase in the overall standard setting process. So I think that's not clear to people.
We definitely need to be clearer, but also part of the problem is nobody's seen any of these things through the complete life cycle yet, so they're commenting a bit on something that's still abstract for them.
Which is also why I think we shouldn't react too quickly to it.
But on that question of sort of doing the upfront research properly, I mean, a classic case is goodwill and impairment, where quite a lot of people have said, why don't we just jump straight from the PIR into standard setting? But I think we're still trying to identify exactly what problem we're trying to solve and exactly what the best mix of solutions is. And I think that's a good case where rushing into standard setting could get us into difficulties.
Well, these people already know the answer. So just have to reintroduce amortization, so they don't think that we should do more research.
Mary?
I think reinforcing what Peter was just saying, both the specific issue of should PIRs be automatically fast-tracked to standard setting, and I think we have to go back and explain why PIRs are inputs that identify areas where they're perceived to be problems, that research isn't a delaying tactic. I guess this is Sue's point, it hopefully to expedite the resolution. But I think a more general message that we should be sending is when we put out the request for views and any feedback, I'm jumping ahead a bit, but basically we got confirmation around a lot of other things. People have comments, but broadly, yes, finish things you're working on, etc. It's the research agenda that is at the heart of where there's flex. It's not that we won't change other things, but this is the one where there's the give and take and the hard decisions to be made about which to prioritize, even if it's to do the scoping and make the decision about should we do something, should we do something small, should we be doing something big. And so I think in our follow-up that this is where most of the board's discussion should be focused, subject to going through the other parts of the overall feedback, but that was the impression I took away from this paper 24A. The second thing is I found the comment in paragraph 45, which is the standard setters from Asia Oceania responding with this grouping. I think we did have a long list of criteria that we would we could consider. Paragraph 43 has ones others could consider. Great. Too many, in terms of too many tests. But I think the kind of three overall areas, many of the other things would fit well under those three things. In terms of expressing, have we thought about the overall balance? Have we thought about the reasons for this project? And have we thought about what the sequencing is? So I think that's a good framework for looking at things. I don't think it automatically spits out a pre-programmed answer, but I think it's a good way of expressing our analysis.
I share the views from Sue about what we try to achieve in any of the stages of research project. And the last period from last agenda consultation, I think it is understandable because it was the first time we had such a big your project called research project. And but in the coming years, I think we should be very careful. You know, I don't want to see you know we rush out something and ask abuse, and then have a second DP and spend another 3-4 years. I don't think is effective. And Sue mentioned about the regulatory activity project. I personally shared similar views, and actually during the time we intend to publish, I said we should not.
Okay, next.
Question four was comments we received on the standards level projects. Insurance contracts, obviously people think that's important and needs to be finished. Leases was identified as a priority, and we issued that in January. Conceptual framework is seen as being very important and fundamental to all of our work, and there were some people who thought that we should expand the conceptual framework to include some areas such as principles of disclosure, financial instruments with the characteristic of equity, and other topics such as that. The disclosure initiative is important, although some people thought that the disclosure initiative as a portfolio of projects was a bit confusing, and they found it difficult to follow that. And then there were mixed views on dynamic risk management and regulated activities. Are there any questions on the standards level agenda? No? The question five was an important question. We received a lot of answers to that on implementation support and the maintenance of IFRS standards. And we've discussed in this the implementation guidance, the IFRS Interpretations Committee, transition resource groups, as well as the education initiative under implementation support. Did you have any comments on implementation support?
No, April, I think one thing we should make clearer is about educational related documents. And I think broadly, we actually published two sets of so-called education materials. One is from our due process, you know, examples and others, and even including the something like a fair value guidance we published. But another one, mainly from in the past, from Michael's office, is totally different. And when people challenge us, sometimes make us uncomfortable and confused whether we should go this way or another. But I personally feel they are totally different things. And we should ourselves make it clearer, not confused by ourselves.
Mary?
Question about the comment in paragraph 109, which is question the effectiveness of narrow scope amendments. We had this comment, but, and I'm afraid I didn't note the paragraph number. Elsewhere, there's, I think, a note of feedback from users that saying, be more willing to pursue simple, limited scope projects because the you don't have to start from zero on everything. And the two didn't seem to reconcile, and maybe they don't, but again, in terms of what to bring back, et cetera, might be interesting to kind of look at the underlying, seeing if it's from the same people, if there's more things that we have to work, or whether it's just a division of views about the usefulness and effectiveness of narrow scope projects. That's one comment, and the other is comment 110, paragraph 110, that says, suggested the projects to amend, paragraph 110, second comment.
Which paper are we in?
Page 31.
Oh, okay. Are we already there?
That's good news, right?
That Mary's leapt ahead to maintenance from implementation.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were taken together. Is the everything that's enumerated in 110, what people are saying we should do, is to me exactly what we're trying to do with the research phase. And we should, you do better to explain and, you know, make the point that this is what we're trying to do. So research isn't a, do we like it, do we not, but it's to try and answer these questions so that we will have better, you know, better planned projects. Yeah. Sorry, I was taking maintenance with implementation.
And that's fine. The paragraph you refer to from investors, we've highlighted under the key messages as paragraph 14B, mm-hmm. because it was an area where investors did differ from the vast majority of respondents who generally do don't encourage us.
So that's a difference between stakeholder type.
It's a very significant difference between the stakeholders.
Okay, as opposed to there are some investors mixed in
yes.
that. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's also different types of issues. I think the investors are often talking about disclosure issues, mm-hmm. and the others are more, for example, from the firms and the standard setters, and they're talking about, you know, some detail in share-based payments or something like that, and saying, why don't you step back and take a wider look first before you go ahead.
Martin? Yeah, one short question. Paragraph 85 is saying that respondents expressed mixed views on the effectiveness of the TIG, and in paragraph 19.1, I think it is said that most respondents of the trustees' request for views welcomed the establishment of the TIGs. Now, do we understand why we have different opinions on that based on people responding to the trustees' request for views and on the agenda consultation?
I think that the general response in both consultations was that there were benefits to the TRGs.
Okay.
I think there were equally concerns in both papers, in both consultation processes. And I think the good points that we've got here in paragraph 86 and the concerns that we've got in paragraph 88 of this paper are actually mirrored almost exactly in the paper. Paragraphs 38 to 42 of 24B. They were very, very similar messages. I'm sorry if we've misled you with the wording. It wasn't a difference.
Okay.
If there's nothing else on implementation, which was an area that obviously they thought we should focus our activities on in the coming few years. On question 7, there were...
Yeah, but there was not a clear call for additional work from what we already do.
That's right.
Really like to make clear here. So that's why I think it's, you know, it's also a hidden message, is please stop pestering us with standards setting. Focus your energy on implementation, but
just ensure what you do is helpful and not disruptive.
Yeah. and I'm not sure if the board will. I'm sure the board will not be able to keep itself busy with implementation issues in the next 4 years.
The other comments that were raised in response to question 7, some comments which related to the board's processes. Either the IFRS Interpretation Committee or the final stages of our standard production. There were some respondents who discussed topics which had been raised in the trustees' request for views because the timing of the two consultations overlapped. And then there were some comments received on convergence, and that's described in this paper. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask on these various topics?
Yes, the general one regarding the maintenance activities. The other question, which is not clearly identified or discussed, is who should take care of those activities, the board, the IFRIC, or the staff? And the balance of work, to what extent should the board should be involved in the details of each implementation activity, or should we rely more on the interpretations committee or on the staff, technical staff of the foundation to handle some of the activities regarding maintenance. Is that something which was touched on the strategy or in any way?
I mean, my impression, just thinking back to the comment letters, is when we did the 2011 agenda consultation, I think we got quite a strong message that the board should devolve more to the IFRIC. But thinking of the comment letters that I've read this time, I don't think we get the same message. There, in various parts of the comment letters, there's some concern about making sure that the board adheres to due process and that only authoritative guidance goes out under the board. So my impression is that the board's authority is taken as being of prime importance. I don't know if anyone else had any other thoughts. It wasn't a question we specifically asked.
So you don't get a message for changing the responsibilities in a way?
No.
I think the able is right, you know. I don't think our constituencies can answer such a question as you raised. It's because from outsiders, they will not distinguish between what will come out from board and what will come out from IFRIC. The ones we got from last agenda consultation was obvious. Is it because people feel you already finished the major projects and they didn't expect insurance and revenue and lease would have to spend such more years, and they will feel you should spend more effort on implementation. But I don't think when people say you should spend more effort on implementation means either IFRIC or the board should do. I don't think the other side of the world. It is mainly our own internal resource allocation decision.
The reason why I'm asking the question is that in most organizations, there is a degree of devolution of responsibilities to, I would say, lower levels in the organization to handle day-to-day issues. And sometimes there is a more strategic at certain levels and more day-to-day implementation at other levels. So the question could be asked for this foundation, for this organization, to what extent everything should come up to the top, i.e. from the top, the decision makers, which are the board, or whether some degree of devolution of responsibilities to other levels in the organization could be a normal way of doing.
My understanding of this point is when we have an agenda consultation in 2011, the criticism was IFRIC should work more. And what the trustee did was we provide more toolkit to the IFRIC so that you can issue an interpretation or you can make the agenda decision or provide some kind of reason for that agenda decision, or you can make a narrow scope amendment or go to the research or whatever. And what happened was we issued more narrow scope amendment which the board would involve, and then eventually we changed the standard more than before, and sometimes it caused unintended consequences. So therefore, the constituents thought that, you know, it is not always the best way to change the standard itself, because the issue was raised by relatively small proportion of the constituents. And for that small proportion of constituents, the issue is really significant. However, if you sit back and look at all the impact for the standard basis, it may cause, you know, other problems which would be involved, which would involve more population. So these kind of things happened in this couple of years. That's why it changed the attitude of constituents.
I think that's good context, yes, thank you.
But is it, because I found a lot of these comments very inconsistent. They want us to do more on implementation issues, I think. Yeah. IFRIC is one of those things. Then there is another criticism that the IFRIC takes too many agenda decisions.
Mm.
Too many things are thrown out.
Yeah.
And then there are too many short-term changes. It's narrow scope amendments. It all doesn't add up.
Yeah.
It doesn't add up. Yeah. So that makes me actually think that we're probably somewhere in the right region with all these activities.
Are we on to question 8 yet, April?
If there are no questions on question 7, then we're on question 8, which was the interval between the agenda consultations.
It seemed to me on this one that there's not a full understanding on what the agenda setting process is. So we don't have to wait for a consultation to change the agenda. So some of the comments here that, you know, we could react to changes in the economic environment, etc., etc., we can do that without another. So in the feedback statement, it might be good to just set out very briefly that we don't wait each time for an agenda consultation before deciding on an agenda item. We have to consult with the advisory group, advisory council, I think, but that's about all, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Process. And so, and we have added all those narrow scope things. We've added those onto the agenda as we've gone. There's other things we've added onto the agenda. So the question when you say how often should you have the consultation is, the question's more how often do we have to test the waters and see how people are feeling. But we're not hamstrung by having a longer period.
Pat? In this area, kind of picking up on your observations earlier, Hans, I think one of the more important issues that we should take up that was discussed in the trustees' consultation is this whole area of corporate reporting, wider corporate reporting. It's in paragraph 141. And I think there's an opportunity in the future to kind of bridge the gap in the views of those people who think that wider corporate reporting is something you do outside financial statements. It's in fact something outside of even MD&A at times. And those people who feel, no, it should be absolutely germane to the financial statements. I think it also has the potential to essentially diffuse some of the rhetoric and the debate around this short-termism and companies being too focused on just the quarterly financial results. So in this area, you know, we tend to talk about things like ESG, investments in human capital, innovation, what have you, and people say, oh, that's stuff outside the financial statements. But the reality is all those decisions eventually make their way into financial decisions, which have a bearing on your revenues and your expenses. So I think this is an important area for us to keep our eye on, and I don't think it has to be one way or the other. You know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. So I think technology obviously is a way to perhaps tackle some of these issues. Perhaps maybe reopening the management commentary area as we look at performance reporting, and maybe we move some of this focus to that area. But I think it aligns quite well, Hans, with your point of better communication. And we can lead the marketplace and show them it is possible. You know, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing.
Yeah, that would be also, and I mean, we have already decided we're going to do some research about the wider corporate reporting issue and what our positioning should be, which is not completely clear. So that should be also a part of that strand of work around improving the communication effectiveness.
Thank you. Philip, really very, very interesting, thoughtful, helpful comments on from all over the world. So this is really good. Sometimes there are conflict comments exist, but generally very good, generally very helpful. So what is our next plan about, based on this feedback? Do you have any plan?
I think our next plan is that we'll bring a paper to the board which looks at the balance of our activities and how the messages that we've received in this process would affect our work plan, setting up our work plan. So we'll look at the general balance of activities, the comments that we've received. We'll also look at the prioritization criteria which we've had. I think the main focus as well in the next couple of months, we'll be looking at the individual research projects, because as Mary said, that's where we've got the sort of the flexibility. And for the individual projects, we'll look at what, in detail, in much more detail, obviously, than we have done in this paper, what comments have been received and from which populations, so that we'll look at what comments have been received, who it was important to, why it was important to them, who it wasn't important to and why it wasn't important, and see what effect we think that should have on the board's decision as to whether or not that should be prioritised, whether or not it should be on the research agenda. We obviously are required to consult with the Advisory Council in June, and so we hope that in June we'll be able to take to the Advisory Council the top-level comments we've received here, what effect we think that has on the agenda-setting process, specific comments on individual projects, with a view so that the Advisory Council will have an idea of what the shape of the work plan should look like and they can input into that consultation process. I don't know, Peter, if you wanted to add anything on that?
No, I think that's basically it all. I think for the Advisory Council in June, we need to have a fairly concrete discussion with them, because if we just talk about sort of categories and criteria and things like that, they won't know what to do with it. So I think for the June meeting, we need to give the Advisory Council a description of what we think the agenda is going to look like, so that they've got something to react to and give us some good feedback on.
I think part of it as well is being able to tell the story about why we're deciding what we're deciding, and that was a fairly consistent piece of feedback in the outreach. We gave people criteria to think about, but a lot of people said, well, yes, but we don't really understand the strategy, how it all hangs together. So I think, and it goes back to your point.
We asked them very general questions, of course, so we got very vague answers on many issues. And what my impression from this paper is that, you know, we need to take leadership to create a clear and concise agenda.
I
had a question for April about paragraph 143. It seems in reading the responses to the online survey that there is a kind of perceived conflict between the objective of extending the scope of the work to retain the relevance of IFRS standards and improving financial reporting, because you say, however. And it doesn't seem to me that there is necessarily a conflict between improving financial reporting and maintaining relevance. Because we could try to improve financial reporting with a very narrow scope, or current scope, and without adding anything to the scope of IFRS. We could also improve financial reporting by adding some bits to the scope of what we deal with today that will also improve financial reporting. So it seems to me that this perceived opposition between the two objectives is a bit artificial or hard to understand. And my impression from the last Advisory Council is that there is some support or some sympathy for the members of the Advisory Council for us to really prioritize maintaining relevance, which may incorporate new areas or new, I would say, borderline areas, maybe not necessarily totally new areas, but borderline areas in the scope of financial reporting.
I agree with Hans, you know, we should show our leadership in terms of the relatively clear scope and what kind of products we are going to have, you know. Otherwise, it will be a disaster. It is understandable last year is because there is a period when Ellen is handing over. But I feel now we should be relatively clearer. My question to Peter or Hugh, for the agenda, for the Advisory Council, do we intend to do something similar to what Hans suggests? Give them a relatively clearer scope of each project, or still very vague, long list and vague pictures.
No.
I would feel a relatively clearer would be better than two vague ones.
Yeah, we need to be more precise, and I think one of the problems we had last year was that the descriptions we had of some of the projects looked more like standards level objectives. So it would talk about, you know, improving the accounting for, I don't know, income taxes or something. whereas the objective of a research project is to gather the evidence to enable the board to make the agenda setting decision. And I think if we give a clearer description of what we're trying to do, I think that will help people as well understand what the objective is. At the moment, it looks a bit like a long list of projects. Some of them could be enormous.
As well, partly what we're going to be doing in April and May is bringing those specific projects to you and with the precise objective of getting a much clearer view on what we're doing. That is the purpose. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next paper. Yeah.
Well, 24B is there primarily for information, but it gives a summary of the feedback to the trustees' request for views. We only had 97 comment letters, so you trumped us. Many of the areas have been touched on, but as April said in her introduction, two of the main themes were maintaining the relevance of IFRS standards and consistent application. A couple of the items around relevance that April didn't touch on were that the trustees asked about the scope of the remit of the board and whether it should be widened to encompass either public sector financial reporting or financial reporting by private sector not-for-profits. And in terms of the public sector, given recent changes to the governance of IPSASB, the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board, I think the trustees took the view that it's not an area for the board to get involved with at this stage, although we continue to have liaison arrangements with IPSASB. And I think the responses from respondents came back fairly loud and clear that they agreed with that. More mixed views around the area of what to do with not-for-profits. There was something of a writing campaign from organisations within the sector saying it would be a great idea. And what the trustees asked us to do is to look into an analysis in more detail to look at what's out there at the moment, what the implications might be, taking into account the resources available to the foundation and to the board at the moment, what is coming out of the agenda consultation and what the shape might look like. And we're in the process of doing that and going back to the trustees at their May meeting. One thing to take into account is, in terms of international not-for-profits, how big a sector is it? Mm-hmm. Most not-for-profits and charities tend to be very small, and that's coming through in the what we've been able to unearth from various jurisdictions around the world at the moment. And is there that same cross-border international imperative that we had when, you know, this board was born, and we've seen with cross-border capital flows in the past 15, 16 years or so? So that's something we'll come back to. Technology, as Han said, you had something around digital reporting this morning, and one of the ideas that came up was whether to have a network of technology experts to give us some advice. Again, this is where the Advisory Council were quite hot on saying you need to take account of the implications of technology, but without actually giving us anything relative concrete as to what that means. And we're now trying to seek advice to get more thought on what that would mean and whether there are implications for the board. And again, that will come back in May. I think they were the small and medium-sized entities. We didn't ask a question and said that, well, there is the European Union Capital Markets Union proposal around as to whether there should be differential reporting for smaller listed companies, particularly in the European context. And we've had an initial discussion with the European Commission on that and continue to talk to them. But the party line remains, as for the IFRS for SMEs that you reviewed and put out revised version at the end of last year, in terms of if you're publicly accountable, it should be the full suite of standards. And if you're not, then the IFRS for SMEs is there for use. But we remain open to discuss with the Commission and other users around the world. So I think they were the main missing pieces from that weren't touched on in the discussion on April's paper.
Just one point on not-for-profits, the internationalisation. The development agencies, the World Bank and the development banks and IMF and all those, they all give a lot of money to not-for-profits. And they all require different reporting back, and it drives the not-for-profits. I was on a committee many years ago to try and get them all together, but we didn't succeed. And so that's another international angle on not-for-profits.
Mm. And are they themselves not-for-profits? The World Bank and IDB and IMF.
Yeah.
ISB.
ISB.
There are some very large international not-for-profits which need international financial support. I remember I was in my old days the editor for the French doctors, Médecins Sans Frontières. Mm. We were raising funds all over the world, and we were subject to the US GAAP not-for-profit accounting requirements because we were raising funds in the US. But it was not an international GAAP, it was local US GAAP for a French-based charity.
Yes, just a question. On the paragraph 14 of page 5, it says one continued to press the case that the organization should take on the governance of IPSAB. Mm. So what does it mean? How to take the governance of that organization?
Yes, this came up a year or two ago. In that, well, if I go back to 2004, there was a review of the then IFAC Public Sector Committee when Ian was chair of that committee and I was involved in the review. Mm. And it recommended that there should be an oversight body for SASB in the same way that there are now for the other IFAC standard setting bodies. And this predated the birth of the Public Interest Oversight Board. Mm. IFAC, for whatever reason, chose not to bring IPSASB under that oversight umbrella. So for a number of years, it has sat there developing standards, but without a formal oversight body. Oh. A review was undertaken by a group led by the OECD, including UN, World Bank, IMF, to look at this. One option they posed was whether the foundation should take on the governance of IPSASB. Oh. The responses to that, and a response went in from the foundation, said no. We think there should be an option that keeps it within the auspices of IFAC, but with an oversight body that is more suited to the public sector world, including the UN, OECD, the World Bank, and so on. Mm. And that's the option that they've gone down, and they've set up this public interest committee that now sits and oversees IPSASB. And that's basically relatively recently just got going.
No, I see.
So that's
now
the context.
They have a kind of oversight.
Yeah. Oversight, yeah.
Mary?
In terms of what the trustees are covering, there were a couple of things that were raised at the end of the previous paper comments that we got that I think people might look at and say, those are more strategy, structure, maybe they should be addressed by the trustees. You didn't bring them up, and I think it's they're issues that probably are, while they're not agenda consultation per se, I think it's right to leave them with the board rather than move them into the trustees. And those two things were the discussions about our external review process and wider corporate reporting. And also convergence, those three things that were in the other issues. I think that they're probably areas where we want to keep the trustees informed and updated, but you didn't set them out in your review, you didn't note them as feedback. I think it's not suggested that these transfer to the trustees to make the decisions, and I think that's right. You're looking at me, though, in a way you think that they do, so.
Well, on wider corporate reporting, the trustee's request for views actually said, we're in the game through cooperation with the people such as the IIRC, corporate reporting dialogue that Gary attends and so on. And we need to keep in that game. And
right.
In fact, as Hans mentioned, we're upping the activities in that area, and that links to the financial reporting initiative team that Hugh announced a while back. So in that sense, it's a done deal, and it's happening.
Yeah, I guess that was maybe more because I feel like we're settled and we're not starting a reconsideration.
No.
Wait, well,
about 5 years ago when SET discussed this part, I remember when ideas came out from them, that is whether SET should have annual presentation by experts in relation to new technology. And I'm not sure whether SET already decided to do so or not. But I personally feel it is also very important and beneficial to the board. We should have such kind of presentation annually about, you know, new technology development and possible impact. And also I feel impact is bigger or wider than taxonomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I personally feel we should do so. Not only the SEC, but also the board should.
Yeah, I mean, what we've, in fact, Michelle Prada asked the Advisory Council, because this was an issue of particular interest to them in the course of last year, and Joanna Perry had raised the issue of having an expert coming to the Advisory Council, and at the last meeting, Michelle Prada said that would be really useful before the trustees get back into having a look, and then, as you say, you know, if there are potential impacts relating to the board, then I think the idea of having a presentation, personal view, was that that would be useful too. But we have to do some of the legwork first.
John Wu.
Thank you. What is the next step for the interpretation committee issues? Because these issues are comments are raised in both the foundations and the consultation. However, when you describe the next steps in the future, it was not clear. The issues on interpretation committee. Maybe we better give us some kind of feedback on the members of the committee to discuss about these issues raised.
Yes, I think there's a planned meeting between the board and the interpretations committee at the May meeting of the interpretations committee. And I think that might be a forum for these points to be discussed. I mean, obviously, some of the points are contradictory and some of the points are not all accepted as being true or proven. But yeah, I think probably it'd be discussed between the interpretations committee and the board themselves. And we'll take that into account when we prepare the feedback statements on this.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes. In paragraph 35 and 36, I found a relatively severe comment on our drafting procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, actually, our drafting procedure is not really transparent. Because once we finished our discussion at the board table, then it go down to the drafting procedure, and we have lots of balloting process, and we do make a comment, and we ask some expert to make a fatal flaw review. But in the end, all these procedures are not open to public to the end. So then some constituents showed me the frustration that they can't see that what the final wording of the draft. And looking back to my experience, for example, in the ASBJ, I was not the board member, but when we joined the discussion in the ASBJ, normally they prepare working draft much earlier stage, although the still discussion is going on, but they make a first draft in an earlier stage. And based on that first draft, they discuss which point we should consider, and then rewrite the draft, and the second draft, third draft, fourth draft.
And that's
and then
all public consultation?
Yes. Public meeting.
Available.
Public meeting.
Publicly available, but not consultation.
Yeah, public available meeting where the many observers can read what is the current working draft, so that they can make a comment or send a letter or something like that. And then keep doing that. And in the end, we finalize the draft. So in this sense, making a draft and the discussion is going nearly at the same time. So therefore, it will reveal the what is the draft is all about now, and it get the more scrutiny by the public people, and it will reduce the risk of future unintended consequences or inconsistency between paragraphs, and also it provides transparency so that the constituents would know what is the actual wording of the paragraphs. So I think eventually it will be efficient than the kind of a little bit untransparent drafting procedure. So that is what I felt.
Sue?
I think that we can always look at ways, and we should always be looking at ways to improve our drafting processes, and I think we are also trying to improve the amount of communication we have between when we finish making decisions and give permission to start the drafting process and when we actually publish the final document, particularly now for some of the more complicated standards. That's a longer period of time, and I think we really should try and do that. But I do think we need to be careful in terms of either starting to have drafting discussions in public, given the length and complexity of documents, and also we don't have brilliant experiences in the past. And for example, when we posted the near final draft of the hedge accounting requirements, it led to a whole load of stuff being reopened, because we have a real challenge in terms of balancing what's seen as a re-exposure as opposed to a check of words. So I hear what TAC says in terms of quality, and I think we should always look at ways to improve that and communication, but I think we also need to watch for efficiency and not reopening projects where people are already criticising us for the timelines as well. So it's another area where people say we need to see more, but then could you please hurry up?
Yeah,
so I think we just need to be careful with
the balance. Given the fact that drafting was covered in some of the comment letters, was this type of suggestion made by anybody? Or was
EFRAG have for a while suggested that there should always be made available for major standards a public fatal flaw review. That option is available to the board at the moment. It can decide whether to or not. And as Sue said, with the hedge accounting one, the board did, and it was almost akin to another consultation round.
And actually at the time we discussed it with the Due Process Oversight Committee, and their express instruction to us was to use that with caution.
Yeah, be careful
given,
what you wish for.
I wasn't necessarily referring to that type of process. I think what Tuck is referring to is more of a live drafting process. So you build up the draft over the entire life of the deliberations.
I think there are some real dangers in that as well, though. I mean, there might be some advantages, but there are some dangers as well. So I think one danger is if you've got a lot of drafts in circulation, you open yourself up to people trying to second guess what the final standard actually says, and they'll say, actually in draft three it said this, and surely this is what they really meant. So I think that's one danger. And I think the thing that's most destructive of drafting clarity and consistency is when you end up drafting by committee. And I think if you go into public drafting process, I think there's much more danger that we'll feel a need to concede points to keep people happy. And
yeah, I take your point. If we leave it to some committee or some voluntary body, it ends up asking them to draft. But what I'm saying is, at the board table, at some stage, we put the final draft on the desk of board table, so that even the constituents or observers can read it if they have time. And then they can spot if there is something inconsistent or something is wrong. Of course, I take the Sue's point about our bad experience of hedge accounting. However, that is the case. They raised a fundamental issue, and which we can reject. Because the drafting process is the process we can see whether or not our draft will work as we intended. And because it is totally intransparent, it left to some of the experts. They do the fatal flaw. However, as I pointed out in the trustees' comment, the members of constituents who can join the fatal flaw is not very transparent. So therefore, those who do not know what is going on, it's quite intransparent, and all of a sudden the final draft come about, and then they didn't have any chance to have a say to the, you know, the exact wording. So that gives a lot of frustration, and that causes a lot of submission to the IFRIC and some kind of misinterpretations and something. So if we look at the efficiency in the long term basis, even though having a working draft is a lots of increase the workload of staff members, and it may extend our board discussion time. However, if you look at the longer effectiveness of drafting, I think we should consider something like that.
Taka, you know, I understand your concern, but I feel whether it is practical and how can we handle. Frankly speaking, I personally, even in the current mechanism, I sometimes feel unhappy when I offer comment to some of our the prepared draft, and staff come back saying me, "We go sorry, you know, on this particular wording, we already got comments from Big Four firms, and they generally agree, will not agree with you." And then I said, "Who is the final decision maker?" You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so if the staff said, okay, we accept you, and the staff said, we have to go back to Big Four firm again, whether they would accept. So think about if we face 1,000 comments on this, on that, how the staff can handle, and how board members can handle.
That is exactly the point I want to raise, because we are the board member who is going to sign on the standard. We are the board member should decide the final draft. So therefore, you know, what is happening is the other way around. So we made a, you know, out rough design, but when it comes to the drafting process, so then if WEGO wants this wording, but it is rejected by the staff, so staff knows better than me, that's fine. However, it's not really transparent. If such a discussion is going on, it should be discussed in the public domain.
So, but Taka, you know, the difficulty is, even though I feel unhappy, but I cannot dissent purely because the staff not accept my view.
Yeah, of course.
So if
of
you
course
want
to
involve so many people come together, and then even more views on this paragraph, this wording than others, and how can we handle this? You know, it will be very difficult.
Yeah. But I'm talking about theory.
But I think only one thing is beneficial. That is, some people, particularly in other language environment, people say that we want to see the final, you know, the near final draft for us to translate, to implement. But as to seek further comment, I feel we should be very careful.
Mary. I share a lot of the concerns about complicating our process and inadvertently reopening decisions that have been made, but I do take, not just from this discussion, but from the feedback we got on agenda consults as well as the trustees, that there are concerns about lack of communication about, you know, during the drafting process, which I think appropriately has become more realistic in the assessment of how long it takes, etc. So I think we all have to think, and I think in the first instance, the board and with staff, about how we improve visibility or communication and not make it a black box without necessarily committing to specific actions or kind of due process things. I think taking a process approach could tie ourselves in knots and overcomplicate it, but we think should try to respond to the concerns about going quiet for so long and visibility. So maybe that's a to-do we have to put on our list. Not necessarily.
Perhaps we can have another discussion about this in that new session.
Yeah, yeah.
All I want to say at this point is we already have the most, by far the most open procedures of all standard chapters in the world.
not just accounting.
And of course we can go further and further and further, but there is a point at which consultation, etc., really gets into the way of efficiency, but a lot of people are complaining about everything is taking us too long. And although it would be ideal if this would lead to shorter procedures and fewer interpretations issues, etc., etc., given the nature of what the comments that we receive during consultations, that is not always the motivation that drives people. So there is a point. We have to say stop. Let's let the experts do their work.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.